Hey there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. And now, we hope you enjoy the show.
Hi, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about languages in D&D. Are they a good idea to have that complication in your game? How many languages should you use? Who shall speak at your table?
Yen de Leviathan Sven Grensky.
So I love why this issue came up, Paul, because we have both been reviewing our live stream game from earlier in the year. And you point out that one of the single funniest moments kind of nearer to the end came up partly as a complication of language difficulties is I'm playing a character that only speaks elf. I'm accidentally married to a character that only speaks dwarf. And at a particular point when I'm attempting to arrange a transaction, we have to pull in about four or five different people in this translation chain.
Yep.
And it gets very, very complicated and very, very funny very fast.
You know, this is interesting. This may be a complete side tangent here, but I think that a lot of this comes out because, or maybe you don't see this in newer games, because of stat inflation. So, right? Like, I feel like these days, if you sat down to a third or fourth or fifth edition game in a convention... Right. And you saw stats on the character sheet which had penalties or minuses because they were so low, you would be like, eh, that feels weird or maybe not good, right?
Good point.
Whereas, and I don't know what edition this goes back to, but like certainly NBX is 3DX, 3D6 straight. And when I'm looking here, I've got BX actually sitting here in my hand. When I look at the intelligence modifiers, it specifically tells me, it gives me just text, not even numbers here, of... If I have a 6 to 8 intelligence, I can write simple common words.
Right.
If I have a 4 to 5, I cannot read or write.
Right.
And if I have an intelligence of 3, I have trouble speaking.
Right, right. And it's, you know, that actually might be almost close to unique to that edition, actually, which is what we were kind of running with.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, even an original D&D, it doesn't particularly explicate penalties at a particular point.
I personally love that. And you know, that's, you know, one of the questions we get asked often, and sort of the progenitor of this show even was sort of what's the difference between the way you two run games, right? Cause you were running OD&D and I was running BX, and the answer is very little, that we've both house ruled our additions to a sort of commonality.
Right.
That is one of those few things from BX, which I will still go back to and be like, I really like those specific notes about what low intelligence means in terms of your language skills.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing that I would point out coming from the OD&D direction, I mean, and this is common, is that, you know, OD&D doesn't have any magic to get around the issue, right? That seems like, you know, and if you compare to, you know, a popular, you know, media, like maybe like Star Trek or something like that, right? They have a universal translator and the whole... With one notable exception, the whole language issue is just taken off the table almost all the time.
Now, and, I'll point out that notable issue is held up as one of the greatest episodes of Star Trek Next Generation ever.
I know. And as you know, I'm on the side of saying that episode doesn't make any sense.
Different show.
Are you pro that issue? You're pro that episode.
I love that episode.
Oh, God.
Love it.
Okay. D&D does it differently. Is that not only are languages an issue, but you know, in the original editions, at no level is there in original D&D, at no level is there any spell to get around that issue. There's the first level wizard spell, read languages, that lets you read a script. But even with that, you can't make sense of someone talking in a different language. You can't speak in a different language, and there is absolutely no way around that in any of the magic in original D&D.
Now answer edition, me this, Dan, because maybe you know this and maybe you don't. What about the thief ability to comprehend written language? Is that OD&D or did that come later?
That's in OD&D when the thief shows up in the first supplement. That was always there.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's basically, recreating the Grey Mouser from Fritz Lieber's books, who, had wizard training. So personally, I feel that that's better represented by multi-class thief wizard type thing. Mm-hmm. But that was baked in from the get-go. Yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the other major, I don't know. You know, honestly, one of the first spells I house rule into my game from later editions is Speak with Dead. Which is, again, a sort of, I don't know if you really want to call that language, but it's, again, a way for players to communicate with someone or something they couldn't normally communicate with.
Right. So it's interesting that it's kind of an obvious a thing that you'd want, and then all kinds of different editions kind of go in different directions with it.
Yeah.
So
you want to look at the text?
Yeah, let's look at that. So here is the original D&D 1974 Little Brown Book. This is about 6 pages into the first volume there of what their rule for languages is. And you see that there's a common tongue and a small number of and it says all other creatures and monsters that can speak have their own language and some know common.
Yep.
Now, as usual for original D&D, it never bothers to define which can speak. Right. So you're kind of on your own about exactly how widespread that is.
What about dragons? Do dragons have that chance to speak in OD&D?
They do. Yeah. They do. And then what exactly does that mean? Depending on how you branch in later editions, some editions interpret that chance to speak as, well, obviously they all know dragon. The chance to speak is, do they know common in addition?
Right.
And some other addition goes in a different direction with that. So that's personally actually how I interpret these days myself. But at some point I looked at that and I was mystified by exactly what that meant.
Interesting.
And then they're pretty, and then further down you can see that original D&D is actually pretty liberal about how many languages a character can get, because you can learn an additional language for every single point above 10 intelligence. So the example there is, if you have 15 intelligence, you're going to know as many as 7 languages, common, your alignment languages, plus 5 more.
Wow.
And obviously, in my game, I still go by that rule. So my characters tend to have big, long lists of languages, and BX really clamped down on that. So you either get 1 or 2 or 3, and that's it.
Conversely, BX was incredibly liberal to the races. If you go into, like, Elf or Dwarf, the list of languages you get for free is just a mile long in BX.
Well, that comes right out of original D&D, too. So in the Little Brown... So then there's the races get additional languages on top of this. The Little Brown Books, they get 3 each, and then Supplement 1, I think it gets expanded to 5 or 6. So if you put all those rules together, like Elves and Dwarves get an insane number of languages.
Yeah.
And BX keeps that other part, yeah.
For what it's worth, when I run BX, or when I was running BX, that is one of the things I get rid of.
Okay.
The intelligence dictates languages, end of story, done. And that's why we ended up with Elves who couldn't speak anything beyond Elvish.
Right. And I think that adds a lot to the game. And again, that's one of those places where you and I have house ruled from different starting points the exact same rule.
To the same point.
Right. I like that a lot. So one thing, and we'll see this as we go into other editions, is, again, this all of the creatures and monsters which can speak have their own language. Well, how many is that? So on the one hand, OD&D here is pretty liberal about learning new languages. But maybe there's a lot of languages in the world. And like if I read something like The Hobbit, right, every animal, every bird, every creature in the world hypothetically has its own language that you might learn. Is that what they had in mind when they were writing original D&D? And personally, I kind of run it in that direction, actually. I kind of run my OD&D games of like almost every species in the entire world has its own language. And that's a lot of languages that you might need to consider picking up.
Interesting. Yeah. I have gone a completely different direction.
Right.
We can get into that when we look at BX and 5th edition and But maybe I know you have an AD&D slide in here. Is that
right? So then first edition AD&D comes in, and maybe this is helpful because for the first time there's some kind of explication about exactly who can speak. Mm-hmm. Is you get this table in the DM's guide, and clearly here's a particular list of languages, and they're mostly like different races. At the very end, there's an item that says other, so you can still fill in other stuff, I guess. Back in August of this year, I did an analysis of this table, and it mostly came up that like creatures that had low intelligence or higher had a language appearing on this list.
It's fascinating just looking at this list that like not only do dragons have a language, but every color of dragon has its own language.
Right.
Holy cow, that's a lot of languages.
And every different race of giant has its own language, right? It's a lot of languages. And yet, arguably, it's less than original D&D, because a couple things that don't show up here are griffins and rocks and hippogriffs and gorgons. And I think, like, if you read between the lines in the two editions, I think that AD&D made a lot of them less intelligent, as evidenced by a lot of them that had alignments in original D&D turned into, like, semi-intelligent neutral creatures here. So If alignment says that they're intelligent, then original D&D has even more creatures that should have languages by that mark.
So I would point out the obvious, what I see anyway as a problem here is that it's going to snowball, right? The more monsters we add, the more languages get created, and the number of languages goes up and up and up. And honestly, personally, I'm delighted by that final entry because you do, I think you really do want to take into account, well, what about different nations, right? What about different lands of men? That surely there are multiple languages that humans speak.
Right. And I think like a couple of years ago on my blog, actually, like I went through the advanced D&D, like Fiend Folio Monster Manual 2.
Yeah.
And I actually had a supplemental table from 1 to 100 of 100 other languages that the other could possibly, you know, forward you to.
That is that is just way too many for my taste. Okay. I'm gonna push this forward. Yeah. Let's look at BX. So here's BX where you get a little block about again.
Oh, I see.
Characters speak their alignment language. Mm-hmm. There's the common tongue spoken by most of the, you know, good races. Many monsters speak their own language, blah blah blah.
I see the exact, right, that keeps the exact same 20% likely to speak common that you see in original.
Right. And now the funny thing is here, you get this nice chart of 20 languages at the bottom, which it actually says, right, it points out characters with high intelligence can learn additional languages. You know, dwarves and elves already get a whole bunch of languages. But here are some suggested extra languages besides common, and it gives you this nice list of 20.
Nice.
And frankly, I've often kind of, when I've played this, I just sort of nix the idea that this is a suggested list and that there are more. I say, these are the 20 languages.
Great.
Done.
Great.
Now, when I stare at this list, I start to have some problems with the specific choices. There are some weird things in here. Why specifically do Medusa get their own language?
Right.
That's weird. I also am not crazy about things like, I don't know, why do goblins, orcs, and bugbears all have their own language? Surely they have some kind. I mean, they tend to band together, at least in my games. Why they must be able to talk to each other, right? Now, possibly the argument for there is, well, they would speak their alignment language,
right?
And then now maybe we can dig into alignment language for a second and come back here. Actually, in fact, Let's talk about alignment language.
I despise
alignment languages. I think it causes the exact opposite problem, where it boils us down to three languages, and now there's no barriers ever. End of story.
Within this past year, I've come around to that. And you can sort of see where the alignment language came from, right? And it's sort of like...
Well, I mean, I assume it's exactly what I was just outlining, right?
Yeah.
When you get the five armies together from The Hobbit, how the hell do they coordinate and communicate?
Right.
They must all speak this one language, right?
Right, right. And in chainmail, again, all the different types fall into three, possible, side categories of lawful, neutral, chaotic. And, this being written in the mid 20th century, you can kind of compare this to NATO versus Warsaw Pact countries. And in each case, right, there's one particular lingua franca, that they were communicating with.
I mean, just to go on a quick alignment tangent, that's right. How I always describe alignment to my players. I do not like alignment as morality. I generally say alignment is literally who you are aligned with when the war comes. Who are you, whose side are you going to be on? But you gotcha. Can be lawful and a total jerk. That's fine.
Gotcha.
I don't know if you draw a similar line between alignment versus morality.
Not quite the same. Yeah, it's not quite the same. It's pretty close to, it's pretty close to good and evil, honestly.
and you can also I feel like I'm always having the argument, how can I be a lawful thief? That doesn't make any sense. Like, what do you mean, how can you be a lawful thief? Like, the whole point of thieves is to live within the laws of men and break them, for sure.
Well, originally that's prohibited.
Yeah. That's...
Originally, lawful thieves are, in fact, prohibited. Now you and I both allow that. Something in, like, James Bond, Robin Hood, something like that.
Right. Again, which is why, I prefer to say that alignment is nothing to do with morality. Anyway,
that's... See, that's the... But I agree that the idea of alignment languages short circuits a lot of the interesting complications of having a lot of languages.
Yeah.
So... Particularly if I'm, you know, neutral and I can just, particularly if, like, hypothetically animals can have languages and stuff like that, right? If I'm neutral and that just allows me to talk to literally anything, that is honestly very awkward.
No, and I find that very strange. Let me go. Oh shoot, just dropped us back to the beginning. Sorry. I find it. If you want to say creatures have their own language, I guess that, you know. That seems a little weird to me. I like that maybe there's a spell for speak with animals, but the idea that they have their own language such that I could, like, go to a library and get a book or find someone to teach me the language of the foxes seems really weird to me.
But I mean, it happens in The Hobbit, right? That totally happens more than once in The Hobbit.
That somebody learns the language of an animal?
Well, that they say that they have.
That they say they know how to do it. Sure. Wasn't that usually a wizard, though?
No, I don't think. No, I mean, like, I think you've got a ranger. I think you've got a ranger does it once. I think maybe Gandalf does it once. Or there's a case whereby there's a case they're trying to get into the secret door, you know, to Smaug's lair, and I think a sparrow comes by, attempts to talk to Bilbo, right, and is frustrated that Bilbo doesn't understand him.
Right, and then you get to actually a little scene. Dwarves from... understand Thrush and et cetera, yep. Yeah. Or Raven? No, sorry, the dwarves understand Raven.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a little scene you get from the...
to come in and translate for them, to talk to the Thrush, as I recall. They actually need another bird.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Which is great, right, okay.
Yeah.
This is what I think.
I agree.
Yeah, a thrush, right? Because sorry, one of our commenters is asking about a thrush.
Right.
Yeah, right. Because that's the riddle, right? Is when the thrush knocks, something like that.
Something like that.
And so they want to talk to the thrush. Yeah. Anyway, this is honestly, I think, when language gets fun in role playing games. When you have multiple languages and you've got a little bit of overlap here, there, and then suddenly you have to start, you know, bringing more people into the conversation than you would otherwise be inclined to do. Because of language barrier.
Right. Well, one thing I was going to say was you know, one of the really bright spots in my campaign has been, again, OD&D style, every race has its own language, fairly large number of languages you can learn, is that in different circumstances, it winds up putting, you know, a spotlight on different players for role play purposes that normally wouldn't step up as the face man of the group. Yep. So, you know, one person has bugbear on the list, one person has ogre, they run into some bugbears and they want to negotiate. There's only one person that can do that, right? It's not the person that normally does a lot of role play, but all of a sudden they're thrust into the limelight. And then later on, like, this particular character has a relationship with the bugbears in the dungeon as a result.
Yep.
And that has been, like, really, really rewarding and really nice to kind of throw particular players into a place that they're not normally comfortable.
Yep, I agree. Totally agree. So here's my argument, right? Since we're staring at the BX list, I think 20 is the perfect number. So I think 3 is way too few. Everyone's just going to be able to talk to everyone, and that's what you get with alignment languages. Again, assuming you're using a three alignment system.
Yeah, agreed.
Is there 9 alignment languages in AD&D?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay, great.
Which is obviously ridiculous, right? Yeah. So for many, many years, I was arguing... that when you go to the nine languages, obviously that's ridiculous. It kind of makes more sense with, yep. with three alignments. And in the last year, even that has become problematic for me.
Now with 20, so 20 right. feels like a bunch, feels like a good number.
Right.
I think that when you get into the point of like you have a 100, you have 100 languages, right. that right. it again becomes meaningless, right? If I'm sitting down and creating my character and I get two or three bonus languages and I'm looking at a list of 100, how can right. I possibly choose? What are right. the chances right. that this language is actually going to be useful in some adventure? I would say pretty yeah. low, right? Like, okay, I know Medusa.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Well, I mean, I totally agree. And I mean, I don't think there's anybody that actually probably plays with 100 languages. I mean, I made a table once because I kind of half thought it was funny.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so the truth is, like, how many languages are there in my game? And it's about 50-ish. Yeah. It's about 50. And that's been and with one language per point over 10 intelligence, that's been working pretty okay.
Yeah, I think if I were running a campaign today,
right.
I would probably rewrite this list of 20. I would still have right. 20, but I would rewrite yep. the list to have the languages I yep. want in there. I do like that there's a human dialect. You know, I use the ancient Emorian, so I usually have ancient Emorian yep. as a possible language.
Great.
And then I love that it's in a numbered list, so I can roll a d20. Like that's yeah. I yeah. really want to be able to randomly roll languages. So having yeah. them in a list like this,
for what it's worth, my original D&D book has a list of alignments, right? It's a comprehensive list of mm-hmm. races and alignments, and I've jotted in numbers 1 through 20 on each of those rows, so I can do the same thing.
So speaking of jotting in, you can see I like that list so
just
much
like
that
this.
I transcribed it into my OD&D book. And I just dropped it in there in the beginning, I think, of Volume yeah. 2, just so that yeah. I could have them handy. And this is exactly the BX list. I've just copied it verbatim.
I'm going to strenuously disagree with you, Paul. When I jotted my list, it was in Volume 1. So we're going to have to agree to disagree on exactly what page we jot in the list okay. of languages.
Here's my argument for Volume 2. It is directly across from the list of all the monster stats.
Okay.
So I can open up my book and I have monster stats on one side, languages on the yeah. other.
Okay.
what a silly thing to argue about. Okay.
A strong argument. I'll grant you that. A strong argument.
Okay. Here's third edition languages.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
How many are there?
There are 20.
Yeah. Interesting.
Why didn't they just put the numbers in there? Oh, I want to see the numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, really interesting here is that they've introduced the concept of common alphabets, and I think that's yeah. Yeah. really cool.
Yeah. The other thing is that they have batched up, right? They've batched up a number, mm-hmm. kind of like you were talking about. So under Goblin, that actually includes goblins, hobgoblins, and bugbears, right?
Yep.
Under
I love
Giant, that includes ogres and giants. And then they have a language like Infernal, which covers all devils and all lawful evil outsiders. So they're doing a lot of batch-up type stuff rather
yeah.
than just one race.
I think that's
language.
What I want to do. Now, I wonder about orcs yeah. and giants and goblins not all speaking a common language. That seems a little weird, but sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I like that, you know, again, from in both Original and BX, I kind of like that 20% rule, right? So,
yeah.
so, and is that like per creature? Is that per group of creatures, right? So when my, characters confront some group, you know, 20%, it's 1 in 6, right? I roll a D6 if they try to talk to them, and on a 6, one of them knows common. So if you do have to have groups communicating, then certainly one can learn the language of the other. That's not insane. As a translator type situation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah. So, I mean, the funny thing is I'm remembering now when we played not my
right.
birthday life play game, but the game the year before where you guys
right.
were fighting a lot of goblins, I frequently had to find out, does the goblin know common? And I think
right.
I just quickly adjudicated, there's a whatever, 1 in 6 chance, I think I probably said, and just tossed a D6.
Yep, that is appropriate.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
But that became an issue, I think, throughout. And then, in fact, as I recall, that's why you guys hired Rose, right? You were actively looking for someone who
right.
could speak goblin. Although she couldn't.
Right. Right.
You guys just, she's a dwarf. She probably speaks goblin.
not knowing about how you'd edited the rules, actually, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was making a stab that, I know in BX, dwarves automatically know goblin. Let's hire a dwarf. And I, once again, your editor of the rules screwed me on that, which was... Great.
That's funny. and one of our favorite Jeez. NPCs was introduced. Let's jump ahead and quickly look at 5th edition. Here's the list of 5th edition languages. Very interestingly, so they've kept the script concept. They've split it into two groups, sort of standard and exotic, which I find very interesting. I found one case where this was useful, which is when I was making a bunch of pre-gens. I generally sort of had in my head, well, this character is a wizard and like studies a bunch, so they're probably going to know a bunch of weirdo languages, versus this is a ranger who's out in the world, so they're probably going to know useful languages to talk to locals. So then I could just, you know, kind of target myself to one list versus the other. Other than that, I'm not sure why I care about standard versus exotic.
Is there some, I mean, I don't know if there's a rule, is like one is harder to learn or something like that. I don't
think so. I gotta dig through the book and take a look at that. But
I mean, while you're doing that, so one thing I noticed again, as someone who played quite a bit of third edition, this looks a whole heck of a lot like that third edition list we looked at.
It's pretty
Goblin is batched up the exact same way. Ogres and giants are batched up the exact same way. The script category is exactly the same thing. There are 16 languages here, and I think the only thing they've done is they've taken out the four elemental-based ones, is what it looks like to me.
Yep. Yeah, the fact that there are 16 bothers me just a little bit, because I want 20, because I want to roll d20s.
Totally.
Interestingly, I'm looking at the text here, and it tells me that you need your DM's permission to take an exotic language. That's the gate they put in there. They're like, standard language, no problem. You want an exotic, you know, talk to your DM, make sure it's cool.
Yep.
That's interesting.
And I will say that, you know, my players, you know, my players have picked up things like dragon or like even undead, like a ghoul or something like that. And there has been, you know, a tiny little bit of snickering about how easy that was when they wanted to pick that up. So it's, you know, it's legitimate. It's not crazy.
Yeah. I would probably, so the couple of things that jump out at me, again, if I were going to sit down and write my campaign, I would probably customize the lists because...
Yeah.
Still strikes me as weird that giants, goblins, and orcs all speak different languages. Maybe I might be tempted to add a language that's like a weird pigeon language that the three of them all speak, just so they can communicate with each other. Maybe they're dialects, right? Maybe orc, giant, and goblin are all dialects of some common base or something. That might be interesting.
Totally legitimate.
And then I would add in some world languages, you know, my ancient Amorian, and I'd probably add a couple others of sort of, you know.
I mean, to a certain extent, the script issue at least already suggests a backstory to that, right? So whether giant has descended from dwarvish or vice versa, right? They kind of have these families built in with the scripts there. And I think in the past, I kind of attempted to, create a tree of languages based on that in third edition.
Yeah, I mean, I do like that the script is listed. Again, I don't know, I've done stuff before with ciphers and fonts and whatnot, so I like that. I like being able to, like, I could use Dwarvish runes, but write some gobbledygook, because technically it's written in Gnomish.
I will play devil's advocate, right, that if I do have a site that has a whole lot of goblins and bugbears and ogres, right, the way I'm playing, potentially different players have to interact with those different subgroups. Whereas if you do batch them up, you're going to have, you know, there'd be a lot more value to just learn the one language, and then you'll still have one character being face man all the time.
Okay, maybe we can take an idea here from our commenter, Fred, who tells us there's no description of how rich the languages are, right? That maybe you have languages that just have, you know, are less rich, right? You can use them to identify friends, but you can't really express complex ideas.
Sure.
I feel like that's kind of what I want here, is I want to add a language. Yeah. Like, not take away. Like, sure, orcs, goblins, giants all have their own language. I want to add a language that's common to them that, again, is maybe limited in what they can use it for.
Right. Will you be happy role-playing that limitation, keeping it in mind, like, if it comes up?
Yeah, I can certainly think of, one common trick I've used in the past when somebody is either low intelligence or only knows a language a little bit is to tell them, is to limit the number of syllable words they can use. You can only use 1 and 2 syllable words.
Right.
It's just enough to make that person think a lot about what they're saying, so they talk in a slow, stilted kind of way, which is kind of perfect for someone who doesn't understand a language.
That's pretty good. I once college era, I once went on a week-long camping canoe trip, actually. You know, that was one of the exercises that came up one night making dinner, is like a number of people were restricted to speaking only one syllable words. Super funny. And then somehow I got tagged with the limitation of I'm only allowed to speak in four syllable words.
Whew, that's tough. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's actually a kind of a classic improv exercise, right? You have a group of people. You can only speak in one syllable. You can only speak two syllable. You can only speak three syllable. Four, that's tough.
There was a lot of, you know, creating new words. There was a whole lot of verbosity-ness, inclusivity.
Yeah, yeah. That's a little weird. But so certainly for like a character, again, to talk about like low stats, if I have a character with a six intelligence, right, and it tells me they have, you know, or three or four intelligence, I think, right? You have trouble speaking. I like to tell people, yeah, you know, one syllables only, right? One syllable words.
I mean, hypothetically, you could build that into the rules, right? Of like, you know, the lowest level, one syllable only, next level, one or two syllables, next one up, one or two or three syllables. You could actually build that into a rule set if you wanted to.
Yeah, it works pretty well.
Yeah, that's
pretty
good.
Just what the minuses mean. The minuses are the number of...
Precisely.
Yeah, yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah, well, that's what I like about the languages, the extra languages, right, is that it's just the pluses, right?
Right.
Your intelligence pluses is how many extra languages you speak.
Right, right. I see that. Again, I'm pretty, you know, I am pretty happy with, you know, going back to OD&D, having a whole lot of languages on the table and having a whole lot of languages that each different character knows has been okay. But I totally, you know, the BX way, elegant,
yep,
makes sense. The 20 languages is pretty good.
Now, here's an idea. I'm going to be surprised if you say yes here, but have you ever played with nonverbal languages, like a sign language?
I personally haven't. Have you?
I have not, but now it strikes me as really cool. And I'm thinking of like, you know, like something historically based on, say, Native American sign language, right? Where you have a lot of Native American tribes that all speak their own languages, but the common language amongst them is a sign language. Like maybe that might be cool for my orcs and goblins and giants.
Right. I think canonically, like, the drow language is supposed to be a lot that. In AD&D, I think the drow language is supposed to be a lot of signs and therefore silent.
Interesting.
Has that ever come up in any of my games? Never. It hasn't.
Certainly, I've seen my players tactically start to come up with hand signals for tactics, right? If they want specifically, if they're worried about being silenced or if they're trying to be stealthy.
Right. It's interesting because I saw someone, I don't know where this was, this might have been like a Savage Worlds spinoff, and I saw this on Twitter recently, that someone was aggravated that they'd made sign language a feat or something, which was hard to get, and they were kind of aggravated that they hadn't just added it as a standard language to the list, which was easier to get, if I recall.
Interesting. That does seem
so odd. Someone can actually at least potentially have their feelings hurt if you don't deal with that properly, apparently, which I would like to keep in mind.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, what is the counter argument that it actually is more difficult to learn?
I think the game designer there just hadn't thought that
just through.
I don't think that really makes sense to have it be more difficult.
No. Okay.
So let's talk alignment languages, right? And so Fred Daniels' comment about, you know, maybe certain languages are more cursory was specifically about alignment languages.
Mm-hmm.
So just to kind of touch base on that, that was always in D&D, and you and I have both found it distasteful at this point. Maybe you were ahead of me on that.
Yep. Yep.
So are they just totally out for you?
Yep. Yep. Completely out. Just don't exist.
I'm at a point where my game, you know, they are, you know, I have a legacy where I've said that they exist, and I've found more and more reasons to say you can't do it in this case. Like in the original D&D text, it says if anybody hears an opposing language, they immediately attack. Right? You just immediately get attacked by anybody of a foreign alignment if they ever hear your alignment language. So I've had cases where my players say, oh, I want to use the neutral language. And I go, keep in mind that all the other characters at the table of different alignments are forced to attack you if you use it. Right? And as soon as that came out of my mouth, I'm like, that is friggin' stupid. I'm like, I'm just really, why am I doing this, really? if I'm doing this, the alignment languages should just go away because this is really stupid. That's technically that's where I am in my current campaign game by the letter of the law. So I'll say this. Sometime this summer it came up, one of the guys who played in Gary Gygax's original games answered a question, said, here's how we did languages at Gygax's table. Mm-hmm. Everybody made all their characters neutral. And then it was allowed to learn non-opposing alignment languages. So every character was neutral and learned lawful and chaotic and could speak to everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if that's what you want from your campaign, like, right, I want a campaign where everyone can talk to everyone.
Right.
I don't know, just do that. Like, just say everyone speaks common.
Right.
Like, right. Why bother?
And it's a little problematic. So it seems like at least contradictory. So if that's true, if that's truly how they played it, it seems a little contradictory with, like, the lack of magic, right, and the large number of languages and all the rules around magic swords getting extra languages and, you know, having 6 or 7 or 8 additional languages you can learn. It seems like a really weird contradiction and short circuit. Yeah. So it really troubled me to hear that. And, you know, and the other thing is, for all that those guys would argue against rules lawyers, you know, this player was really patting himself on the back for, like, oh, weren't we clever? We were so clever at short-circuiting the rules, and all you other guys that play the game aren't smart enough to have figured that out yet. And it was a little bit
weird. I mean, that's what it sounds like, that mentality to me, right? Like, haha, we outdid the game designer. Take that.
Right.
Right. Like, right. You know, I guess, but is your game more fun as a result? Honestly, I think the game's pretty hilarious when you have, you know, an elf talking to a human who's talking to a dwarf. You know,
we've gotten so much mileage out of that.
It's hilarious.
I can't imagine wanting that out of your game, honestly.
Yeah.
So it's really hard for me to digest that.
It's really just so much fun. Mananin, I hope I'm saying your name right, was talking about likening alignment language to religious languages, right? Or like ancient Hebrew or Latin, et cetera, et cetera. I could see that. And I kind of then want to be a jerk and say, great, there are alignment languages, but you can only use them to talk about morality.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not telling each other moral lessons, nope, it doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah. And I've also seen it compared to what in Token, the dark speak or whatever they call it.
Deep speech. Tolkien. Sorry,
yeah.
I thought you were talking about the Underdark.
Like the black tongue.
Right. What Gandalf says out loud when he reads from the ring.
Something like that.
Something like that.
And so I'm not knowledgeable enough. I mean, does every single, like, orc, goblin, giant, everything all speak that same language in Tolkien? Or
I'm not a Tolkien scholar enough to answer that question.
Right. So something like that. Yeah. So I'm pretty much at the point of just yanking alignment languages, because every time they come up, they're going to short circuit something, some other very interesting piece of action that could have been happening instead.
Yeah. I mean, and then, you know, a lot of games, I guess, does your OD&D spell list have any language spells?
Just read languages.
Interesting.
That's it. Yep. Right, black speech, thank you. Right. Yep. So original D&D just has read languages, and there's no listen languages, and there's no speak languages, and there's no write languages. It's just read, that's it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of magic in, by the time you get to 5th edition, right, you have comprehend languages, you have tongues. I feel like there's at least one more that I'm not thinking of. I find, honestly, you want to talk about, like, sort of turning the screws on roleplay. Look at, for example, me giving that one magic item that allows you to understand any language, but not necessarily speak it, right?
Right, totally.
Like, so now we've one-directionalized this language, and you have this great moment where you have Rose the Dwarf and Wilder the Elf. Wilder only speaks Elven. The Dwarf can understand Elven, but not speak it.
Right.
Wilder says something insulting about, like, go make the dwarf go search for traps. And she just shoves him into the room and says, no traps. Which is just a delightful moment. And, you know, you don't get that if she can turn and like, quip at him, right?
Right.
Like, the only way she can really insult him is physically.
Right. Exactly. And I mean, I was constantly forgetting. So it was kind of like a surveillance thing, is I was constantly forgetting that she could understand us. And so we were like, we kept dropping, you know, either insulting or rude or secrets or things like that, forgetting the fact that she could understand us and not vice versa. So it made all kinds of really interesting business, and particularly throwing him in as the requested check for traps.
Yeah, I think that's I think that stuff's great. Space Limit asks an excellent question about if you have alignment languages, what happens if you change your alignment? Do you suddenly forget the old language and know the new one?
See, I tend to agree with things that Space Lem throws in here. That's a great point, and I actually hadn't thought of that actually previous. Now I'm embarrassed that I didn't think about that.
Yeah,
that is a great point, and another argument that it really doesn't make sense. So, you know what? In the DM's guide, it actually does say that.
Really? That's really, what happens?
You absolutely do lose the alignment languages if you shift languages. That's actually a written rule in first edition.
On the other hand, right, let's say I'm a dwarf and I die and I get reincarnated as an elf. Surely I still only speak dwarven and not elven, right?
I agree with that. That has happened. That's happened in my game where they've gotten polymorphed, right? And I totally agree with that. Obviously, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah. There's... anybody else ever read the old Forgotten Realms D&D comics from the early 90s? There was a great character in there who was like a big-ass golem, but who was, it comes out, actually a dwarf. A dwarf who was about to die and whose soul got transferred into a golem to save her.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, it's actually a super cool character, and I love stuff like that. I absolutely adore stuff like that. Like, oh yeah, it turns out, really, I'm from this culture.
Yeah, I have that with a human polymorph to an elf in my game, of like, they don't have all the exact right things to check the boxes.
Right. Don't quite understand elven culture.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Which is great. You wouldn't want to take that away, honestly.
Yeah. I think that's a lot of fun roleplay to be had there. So what about, I guess we should also maybe explore written language a little bit. Certainly that's a pretty standard trope. I use it in my own adventures often, of here is some weird script, ancient runes, blah, 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 stuff that you can't quite understand unless you have magic or special skills or something to translate it.
So I know how I handle that. Like, how do you handle that in terms of, like, handouts or presentations or things, if anything?
So that's included in my new DM's Guild adventure that I published recently. Ari Salvatore presents the Vile Crypt of the Reawakened Sisterhood. So there's a handout specifically that I give out in the very beginning of that game that is basically the Rosetta Stone, right? Here is a stone carved tablet with prayers to Yanagu that contains the same prayers written twice, once in hieroglyphs and once in common speech.
Right.
And then throughout, the handouts are just hieroglyphs. Here's a hieroglyph handout, you can translate it. And then I make a point in the text of, like, you know, some players are going to super dig that and some players are going to think it's tedious.
Right.
And maybe you should allow them to short circuit it with, say, a comprehend languages spell or a history check or something along that line.
So where did you get the actual script for those handouts in that adventure?
That's a funny story, actually. I searched and searched. Basically, I'm lazy. So what I wanted to be able to do was just have a font that was hieroglyphs, so I could just type it in English and it would just come out as hieroglyphs.
Great.
There are a lot of good hieroglyph fonts out there, but of course, you got to be careful with fonts about can you actually publish them? Right. Advice to anybody who's thinking of publishing out there. You can't just grab art off the internet and shove it into your publication and sell it.
Good. Right. Good point.
So I scoured and eventually found a font that was okay. I found a font that I really loved and I started and I used that originally in my playtest. And then I was like, this says free for non-commercial use, but doesn't say free for commercial use.
Yep,
so. I then scoured the internet for a font that was free for commercial use.
Gotcha.
While also emailing the creator of the original font and saying, can I please use your font in this way? and actually had it completely, the adventure completely transcribed to use the new font when he finally got back to me and said, yes, you can use my font.
Oh, interesting.
And I was super delighted and gave him a nice big credit in the opening page of hieroglyphs by, I believe his name, oh geez, remember his name off the top of my head. Wait, I'm going to give him a credit now. Bartek Nowak. Bartek Nowak made a font called Hieroglyphy. It is gorgeous.
Great, great, lovely, lovely. So that's wonderful. I'm glad I asked.
There's my silly hieroglyph story.
You know, without using different alphabets or scripts, one thing that I've done is, you know, I've used proxy languages, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've gone to Google Translate and I've said, in this campaign or world, the relationship is maybe dwarves speak German and elves speak Italian and orcs speak Russian or something like that. And used Google Translate to create, you know, the actual handouts or something like that.
Esperanto is a great language for that.
Okay.
Because you're probably not going to sit down and play a game with someone who knows Esperanto.
Well, there you go. On the other hand, I've also tailored, and you know, it's a game that we played in together. You could tailor the language in this particular game, the proxies in this game, for what the players actually know. So if player X knows language L and their character is supposed to know, oh geez, I have too many variables here, and their character is supposed to know language Y, then in this game, language L is language Y.
That's great.
So we had my partner Isabel playing a half orc. And so in that game, suddenly French became orcish. So all the orc handouts were French. And then actually I started folding in cultural things too. So orcs ate a lot of cream sauce and they really liked big baguettes and things like that.
That is great. Hang on, let me go back real quick. So one thing is I've used that Google Translate trick a lot for naming things. Funny anecdote, the lost race of gnolls that are kind of Egyptian themed in my game are called the Tsakar Buru, which is two words from languages. I don't even remember which languages, but it literally just means dog head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Funny little.
It's a great trick. I think I've used that trick at some point now that I'm thinking. That's a great trick.
Yeah. I also know of groups who will use accents to be stand-ins for languages. So, for example, Elvin is speaking in a British accent. So I will use a British accent to signify to the table that I'm now speaking in Elven, or I will use a French accent to signify I'm now speaking in Orcish or whatever.
Interesting,
which is kind of funny. It's a nice audible way to signal the group. If you remember in our games, I think the group started doing this to signify that they were speaking common.
Right.
Which is weird.
It was a good exercise.
It was strange, right? And there was a lot of debate about what the hand signal was going to be. And it was funny. So, in fact, Robert Bevan writes a series of books called Critical Failures. If you've ever read that, quite funny. The humor maybe is a little puerile at moments, so be prepared if you're going to go check this out. There may be some crass elements to it, but. The notion, it plays on that old trope of players in the real world who get sucked into the fantasy world and, oh my gosh, it's real now.
Yeah.
He totally plays with that notion of foreign languages are just accents.
Okay.
And there's a lot of humor in there of like, wait, you're speaking Elven? And then, no, I'm just, oh, I just speak, well, let me just speak with a British accent. And now suddenly Elven comes out. And all the people from the real world are like, you're just speaking in a British accent, whereas all the other people are like, I don't know what you're saying. I can't understand you.
That's I hadn't thought of that. Other thing you can use I've used Google Translate for is if you do want like a pidgin, language or somebody that's not proficient, if you translate it twice, or at least a number of years ago this would happen, if you translate English to French and then back again, you get a scrambled, almost nonsensical English statement back. So it's still rough enough that if you do two or maybe three translations, you get like a scrambled up, not totally sensical version of what your original statement was.
And what are you using that for in gaming?
Well, it could be like an orc. It could be like a low intelligence person writing. It could be someone who's like, cursed or mad or insane or something like that.
Right.
So you get sort of like a puzzle or a riddly type thing. Can you make sense of what this was attempting to be?
Right. Okay. I can see that. Yeah. Yeah, it seems like a little too involved to use on the fly to present a characteristic, but maybe you were going to pre-write some stuff for something like
yeah,
a puzzle.
I can see that. Yeah, it would be in writing or a scrawled note or something like that. Yeah, I wouldn't try to do that on the fly.
That's great.
I can do that on the fly.
Okay, great. Any final thoughts, I guess, on languages?
It has really added a lot to both of our games recently.
Yeah.
And so it's been on my mind this year because it's been adding so much to both of our games. And then when I heard that Gygax's players thought they were being clever by just wiping it off the table, that really upset me. That really upset me and troubled me of taking out this really, really interesting element from the game that's been adding so much and has, you know, so much rules text originally around it, that I really, really want that to be an issue in my games, and it's been so interesting.
Yeah, it really adds a great layer to your roleplay. I mean, it's if you want to cleverly cut roleplay out so you can just focus on combat, okay, great. But yeah. I definitely recommend, like, put language barriers in there, and interpret low int to mean poor language skills, and that you can really creates some great moments between the characters.
And I'll point out, so Space Slime is pointing out that, you know, in a culturally different place, maybe accents, you know, don't have the same connotation. And of course, that's one of the notes that I had here is obviously if you're actually playing, you know, maybe you're playing D&D or whatever in a completely different language, and then all your associations and connotations are going to be different.
Yep.
You know, and having had a number of French visitors here a week or two ago, there was a point where, like, they started to, you know, play act what other languages sound like to them, right? And so their play acting like English was like, right, was what English sounds like to them. So maybe if you're playing in French, then all your orcs speak English or something like that.
I mean, I think the point is just to establish with your group some tell of whether it be a physical gesture or an alteration to your speech in some way that indicates I am now speaking in this language. And that's just something you have to establish, you know, with your group. If you're very clever, maybe you think of it ahead of time instead of, like, at our game where it suddenly became this weird debate about what hand gesture should we use to indicate we're speaking in common.
Right. That's a good point. And then I guess there's a difference there between, like, are you talking to someone in Orcish and you don't understand them? Or are you talking in Orcish and you do understand them? Because how you play that out is going to be very different, obviously. A lot of the time, if I go into a monster language knowing that the players don't understand it, but if the players do understand it, then I have to come up with some kind of tonality version of what I was just doing.
Right. And then I would also, I guess, a random thought that just popped in my head is consider basing some of the adventure in a safe place where the language is not the standard one the players all speak, right? So that's what we sort of had accidentally by having a bunch of elves who generally spoke Elven in a human town. But I could imagine the inverse, right? What if you're just normal adventuring party that's predominantly human with a couple dwarves or elves or whatnot, all go visit an Elven city, and then they're all going to speak Elven by default, right? Yep. And they have to be asked, do you speak Common, right? That's an interesting moment of roleplay, I think, to have at least some of your party not able to converse with the general populace.
Right. And if you have, you know, even just standard mega dungeon and you have like a bunch of different factions and the players know about that and they're going to go attempt to like ally with, you know, the bugbears, as happened in my game, then all of a sudden it becomes really important that someone can communicate with them, and that person, you know, may not be used to being the negotiator, and that becomes a really interesting point.
You can make an interesting NPC out of that, too, I imagine. Like,
sure,
here's the goblin king and here's the goblin wizard, but also here's the goblin translator. There's nothing special about this goblin other than it can speak Common.
Right. And possibly not well, right? Possibly not super well.
I recall now that I had a character, an NPC in our live play game who was your guy's teamster who was tending your mules. And he claimed to speak Elvish. And then I just had him do it really poorly. And I did that by thinking of what he was going to say and then doing a couple random word swaps and just getting a couple words completely wrong. Of like, yes, no problem. I will take very good care of your mother. right? Which is, wait, what? No, he means the mules. He means the.
So it's interesting how much, you know, it's really interesting how much richness this brings into our D&D games and how many media properties, you know, maybe sci-fi ones, I don't need to name a particular one, you know, that wipe that off with some kind of magical, you know, universal translator type thing when it's, when it's, there's so much material that's so interesting for that.
Yeah.
So it kind of surprises me still.
Yep. I agree. All right, if you have any thoughts about how you've used language or language barriers, written languages, nonverbal languages, any of that stuff, please leave some comments for us here in the video. We'd love to hear from you, hear your thoughts on how you've used it or how you'd like to use it in the future. Or if you have any other comments about things we haven't thought of, direction you'd like to hear us talk about in future shows, please do let us know.
Definitely. Another reminder, we're going to have our last show of the season on December 8th, and actually we'll be broadcasting from PAX Unplugged is the plan for December 8th. Then we'll take a short couple-week break for the holidays here at Wandering DM. We'll come back in the new year for Season 2 of Wandering DMs with a whole bunch of new topics and new comments and guests and wanderings to other conventions in the new year that we're looking forward to.
Yes, we will be releasing special patron-only videos during that break that you can get access to if you join our Patreon at patreon.com/wanderingdms. Those should go live generally on the Sundays where we're off, so consider checking out our Patreon, and many thanks to those who have already donated to our Patreon, and look forward to seeing some new special videos coming very soon.
That's right. And if you want to join our current patrons and see that patrons-only content, please join us over at patreon.com/wanderingdms is where you can do that. So remember, in addition to that, you can like, follow, and subscribe to us at Twitter and Twitch and YouTube by the handle WanderingDMs on all of those sites. And we hope that you do that if you haven't done it already.
Our shows are also available in audio-only podcast formats. You can get them on Google Podcasts and iTunes and all the places that serve podcasts. If you're listening to this show on one of those sites, please consider leaving us a rating or review. You can also get access to our podcasts either directly or find those other sites through our website at wanderingdms.com.
Absolutely. So one more time, thanks again to our patrons who support the show, and you can see you can join them at patreon.com/wanderingdms. And again, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So we hope that you'll join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.